listening?
Are you listening? Are you listening? Are you listening? Yo, my G. Are you listening? Are you listening? Are you listening?
Are you listening?
Are you listening?
Are you listening?
Are you listening?
Are you listening?
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Are You Listening podcast, where two friends sit down and talk about music for a little while. My name's Scott. I'm here with my good friend, Brand. Brand, how's it going, man?
Top of the morning.
Yeah, it's actually been a while for us.
Yeah, you went on a long vacation, and well, I guess the vacation it was a standard size vacation, but the schedule of the vacation
felt long because it was a vacation. Then we had a holiday and other things going on and craziness, and it's been a few weeks. Anyway, I gave you a record to listen to, and so we did for 3 weeks roughly. Yeah, I gave you the self-titled record from Presidents of the United States of America.
And I can happily say that I didn't do what you would have done, which is probably pound out your notes in a week and then not touch the record for 2 weeks. I did not do that.
No?
I jumped in once in a while, gave it a listen here and there, and I didn't do my notes till this week. So my notes are as accurate.
As fresh as regular.
As they would for regular episodes, correct. I didn't bank
That's
them.
That's fantastic.
Then, I'm going to cold read my notes on here like a maniac. That's not me.
I just like to get things done and ready, and then cold reading just comes naturally to me. So,
Well, I don't know if that could be said. I do edit this thing, so.
Let's get into some notes about the Presidents of the United States of America.
Sure, we're starting with George Washington, right?
George Washington starts it off. Yeah.
Great joke.
There we go. The Presidents of the United States of America, occasionally referred to as PUSA, were an American rock band that formed in Seattle, Washington in 1993. I did not know they were a Seattle band.
Seattle, I don't even care about that. I'm going back to the first thing. Until you wrote that note, have you ever in your life heard anybody refer to them as PUSA?
Yeah. It was actually an MTV thing. They called them that.
That's not good. That's not
I don't,
good. I get it.
I don't.
It's like POTUS, President of the United States. Yeah, I don't like
it. Yeah. It's not a good thing. When your band name is Presidents of the United States of America, you got to find a way to cut it down, I guess.
He's calling presidents. Like, there's no other the presidents. Just call them presidents.
It's true. Okay.
That's what I would be like. I'd be like, just call them presidents, dog. You don't need to make these crazy statements up. I know plenty of long band names that don't have abbreviations.
Sure.
The Tony Danza tap dance extravaganza. I don't know what abbreviation that they're called. Maybe they call them the Danza or the Tony Danza or the Danza
the
extravaganza.
Danzas.
I don't know. Considering their records are called like Danza 1, Danza 2, maybe they just call them Danza.
Maybe. I didn't even know that was a band.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you're into like the extreme metal and stuff that they're a part of, you would just say Danza, because if you're talking about the extreme metal, you would know that's what you're talking about, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. I pictured Tony Danza up rocking with a flying V guitar with a lightning bolt pattern on it. And
I can promise you it is none of that.
No.
Tony Danza doesn't touch the thing. He was asked about them at one point, though, and I think he is aware of them.
Oh, okay.
But he has nothing to do with Tony Danza, the Tony Danza tap dance extravaganza.
That would be so weird to have a band named after you that I'm sure Tony Danza has never had any interest in extreme metal ever.
No. Yeah, I can probably confirm that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I remember seeing him like it was just in another interview with it. Have you ever heard of this band? He goes, yeah, I heard of them. They're pretty crazy. And I think that was it. Like, he wasn't negative about it.
That's good. At least he wasn't negative.
I could also be making all of this up for some reason. I don't know why this would be in my head, but I'm not going to do any research to confirm. But for some reason in my head, I recall him being asked. Who knows? Maybe AI did it, Scott. Were you living in a new
world? That's what it is. We live in a whole new world. It's crazy. Initially a drummerless duo, schoolmates Chris Ballew, who was the bassist and lead vocalist, and Dave Dieterer, guitarist and backing vocalist, performed a few shows in 1993 as the Lo-Fis. The Dynamic Duo, and Pure Frosting.
Every one of them a better name than the Presidents of the United States of America.
Really?
I don't even like the names. I don't like you. The Lo-Fi's is horrible, but it's better than the Presidents of the United States of America.
Oh, man. Balu eventually came upon the name the Presidents of the United States of America. Shortly after, him and Dieterer added drummer Jason Finn, and the band played their first show as a trio at Seattle's Romper Room in early December 1993.
That's early. 93 is early. This record didn't come out much after that, though.
95.
Okay. That checks
out. Yeah. In 1994, the president signed with the independent Seattle label Pop Llama Records and released their self-titled debut the following year. They also issued a limited edition blue vinyl 7-inch single titled Fuck California on CZ Records. Columbia signed the band shortly thereafter and re-released the album in late July 1995. So, released independently first, Columbia then picked them up and re-released it in 95.
That's what they want. Like that's the goal.
Yeah. That was that's the plan for most bands, I suppose.
Yeah. Get picked up by a big distributor and then get it out there.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, and like at that time, majors were signing anything from Seattle. Mm-hmm. So geographical location surely helped them, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because, you know, nothing but gold came out of Seattle in the 90s.
I mean, I was a fan of a bunch of stuff from Seattle.
Yeah, big sarcasm for me.
I know it was. I was trying to turn it because I love music from Seattle in the 90s.
You love dreary, wet, heroin infused
basement.
I was going to say grungy voice, but that explains the genre itself. So groaning, some moaning, I guess.
Some flannel and torn jeans.
Man, you in that picture. Silver chair shirt on.
I love it.
You thought you lived in Seattle.
I wished I lived in Seattle. From 95 to 97, the Presidents toured worldwide to support their first two albums. In 96, MTV aired a previously recorded live concert from Mount Rushmore for President's Day.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I guess they played on like the Overlook.
You can see it in the background.
Yeah, that means they would have played on the like Overlook. Because like when you go to Mount Rushmore, you don't go to Mount Rushmore. You go
I've never
to
been
the...
there. I don't know how it works out.
You go to like the opposite peak and stare across at it.
Oh, so you don't actually go to the where the faces are?
No. No, you do not. There's no way. Oh. I mean, maybe there's a way to get there, but no,
okay.
That's not where you go to see Mount Rushmore. Like all the signs and everything put you to this like overlook where you're on the opposite peak looking over a valley at it.
Oh, okay. I thought it was something like you could walk up to like 100 feet underneath it or whatever.
Yeah, cartoons have told us that forever, that it felt like you could like crawl up the nose and shit. And
it's
no,
true. It's true.
It was a bummer. Don't get me wrong. It's staggering. Like it's something to say. It's an achievement. But then also running through your head is like, well, this was kind of a native thing that we kind of
stole these from the Native Americans.
We're gonna carve this into our dudes' faces. Okay, great guys, great, good work. And it is a feat of American of engineering, but then it is also like we're not like close, like we're kind of not even near it. Like we're
right.
This is a different thing. This is a different thing altogether. But if you're that close, you probably wouldn't even be able to like I don't know.
It'd probably be like, oh, that's a huge view or whatever.
That's a huge ear. You know, I don't know.
That's just a big nostril I'm looking at. Fantastic.
But man, did cartoons convince us we could have crawled on those faces and gotten up in there?
That's very true. In addition to relentless touring in the U.S. and Canada, the Presidents made multiple tours of Europe, Australia, New Zealand, and Japan. They were featured in major print media and on radio and TV, including multiple appearances on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno and The Late Show with David Letterman.
Yeah, I could see Leno loving these dudes.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Like TV for Leno? Sure. Yeah, TV Leno loved this. Oh, let's get them out here, guys. Funniest thing I've ever heard. Good one.
For sure. The band turned down an offer to perform on Saturday Night Live in the fall of 1995 because the date conflicted with Balu's wedding, but later made an appearance on the 11th episode of Mad TV in January 1996. So turned down Saturday Night Live, went to Mad TV.
Where are you at with sketch comedy? Basically, Mad TV versus Saturday Night Live. Like, do you have any basis in any of them? Like, either of them?
I mean, I watched Saturday Night Live a long time ago. I haven't seen anything new from that show probably in over 10 years. And then Mad TV seemed like the more childish version of Saturday Night Live. Like, they had that Stewart character, and I used to sure be able did. To do a pretty good impression of him. That was pretty funny.
I think there's anybody in a 10-year age range that did.
Yeah. So I don't really have a dog in the fight, but I think I gravitated more towards Saturday Night Live.
Because I remember as a kid, I think Saturday Night Live, it's a lot about current events. So, like, when you're watching Saturday Night Live, if you don't know anything about current events, it's just kind of like, okay.
You're lost.
All right. Yeah. I had no idea. And Mad TV, even though they incorporated some current events, there was still actual things that were, granted, dumb funny, but they were funny.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it was. It felt more dumb funny than Saturday Night Live ever did.
And I think that's where I was at. Like, I preferred Mad. I would have, if that was the options, if those were the only two options of television,
that's it.
I would watch Mad TV, because at least I'm going to laugh. Saturday Night Live.
Right.
I didn't know what was going on. Oh, great. We're talking about the election. I'm 7.
Right.
I don't know what we're talking about.
Which one had the girl dressed in the school? Was it Molly Shannon? Like, she put her hands in her armpits and.
Oh, that was Superstar. I believe that was I believe that's Saturday Night Live.
Okay. I didn't like that at all. Yeah, I remember
there's definitely more classic bits from Saturday Night Live, but I don't know if they're classic because they've been inundated with us telling us they're classics.
Right.
There's nobody sitting back like, you should see this Mad TV sketch. You should
Mad TV. Yeah. Night at the Roxbury, I wasn't into those dudes either. In addition to live performances, the band contributed a cover of Video Killed the Radio Star to the soundtrack to The Wedding Singer. Also a cover of Ian Hunter's track Cleveland Rocks was chosen as the theme song for The Drew Carey Show.
What a banger that was. It made me think Cleveland was cool.
I did, and then I went to Cleveland and realized, nope, Cleveland's still in Ohio. Not a great place.
He's got to stay on that main drag. You cannot get off the fucking main drag. You cannot get two streets out of that main drag.
Of Cleveland?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... Emily and I went there for part one of our honeymoon.
Yeah, you held a gun to her head to get her into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
We went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We did walk around the city a whole lot, and boy, did that not feel great.
Yeah, especially if you got, again... off that main drag.
We it did. Feels, yeah.
You know, respect all the Ohio fans out there. Respect all the Cleveland listeners, but it feels like you might die.
Yeah, it does.
It feels different. It feels different. Yeah. I'm not saying that, you know, there's not places in Pittsburgh that are like that. I'm just picking the closest, biggest city to me.
Oh, yeah. Detroit and, is, I mean, yeah.
You have no, for you sure. got no room to talk either. You might have less room to talk than Cleveland.
Probably.
The main drag in Detroit feels like you're going to die.
That's not true. I mean, you get 4 blocks worth of safety.
You know, it's from what I hear and what I read, Detroit has been making a comeback, but like 10 years ago, rough stuff.
There's been some rough times for sure.
Sorry, Kid Rock's saving you guys. It's all right.
No, nope. He's not. He's out in the boonies somewhere doing something.
Eminem's got you guys.
There we go.
Really giving back. Michael Moore really saving you guys up there.
Michael Moore. I remember him being a big deal for a minute.
From Flint, Michigan, and still hasn't done a documentary about that water. What are we doing?
No. Right? Like, if there's anything he should be documenting, it's about that crisis.
But again, there is so much information out about it everywhere, though. I don't know what else he could add to it.
Yeah, what's he gonna give me? What's he gonna give me that I don't know already?
He's gonna show you, like, thirsty kids for an hour, and then you're gonna be like, okay.
Right. And dirty water. The band's original song, Man, in parentheses, Opposable Thumb, appeared in the Nickelodeon film Good Burger.
Okay. Welcome to Good Burger. Home of the Good Burger. Can I take your order?
Was that Mad TV? Was that all that?
No, that was all that.
It was Nickelodeon. Yeah, all that. That's right. Yeah. They also wrote the theme song for the 1998 movie, TV movie, My Date with the President's Daughter.
Oh, starring, I can't pull his actor name. I can see it in my head, but I can't pull it. But the older brother from Boy Meets World.
Oh, really? His name was Eric in the show in Boy Meets World.
His last name is, it starts with a W, I believe. Nope, no, it doesn't. His name's Will Friedle. I didn't Google that yet. I just pulled it.
Pulled it. The band also performed a cover of the George of the Jungle theme song for the 97 movie of the same name.
So you're telling me that this band was literally synced up with like everything I was into as a kid, and I didn't know.
You didn't know.
Like, that's crazy.
You like that George of the Jungle film?
It was way overplayed. I liked it when it came out, and then every Disney interstitial, every single like weekend on Disney, it was playing, and I was like, guys, let's just settle this down.
Yeah. The President of the United States of America's self-titled album was released March 10th, 1995. Critics praised the band's catchy, humorous, and self-deprecating songs, which were a major departure from the grunge and post-grunge sound present on the airwaves. The album received Grammy nominations in 95 and 96. The album peaked at number 6 on the Billboard 200. As of 1997, the album has shipped over 3 million copies and has been certified triple platinum.
As of what? 97?
Yeah, in 97, in 2 years.
Wow. I mean, I'm not saying there was a huge pickup in people buying it since then, but
right, no, yeah,
that's a lot of records in 2 years.
Yeah,
a lot of records in 2 years
for a pretty much a joke band. Like, these dudes even played like 2-string basses and 3-string guitars. All these songs are played like minimal instrumentation.
I like that.
Yeah,
they still make them crazy. Sound full though. Good stuff.
They do. Yeah. Let's get into albums that were released in March 95.
Yeah, I'm sure I got tons here.
Yeah, I don't think you do. Coming out on the 7th, we have Warrant with Ultraphobic.
Yeah, I know who Warrant is, but...
Yeah, I don't know anything about the record.
That's the end of it. I don't think I've ever listened to a full Warrant record.
I can't imagine I ever have. Also on the 7th, we have Adam Ant with Wonderful.
I don't know when that is. I like some Adam Ant.
I think... Late 80s Adam Ant is what I was thinking. I liked.
Yeah, I like King of the Wild Frontier.
Okay.
I don't that's Adam Ant's solo though, right? I like Adam Ant and the Ants.
Yeah, I think Adam Ant is the solo project.
I don't know if I've ever listened to an Adam Ant project though. I know I've listened to a few Adam and the Ants.
Adam and the Ants, Kings of the Wild Frontier from 1980.
So I wasn't lying. I told you it existed.
No. Yes. Yeah. And it's that's
Kings,
the,
not Kings.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the Adam and the Ants record I know as well.
80. Yeah, that's a while before.
Yeah.
I know his 81 record also, Prince Charming. I also own that one.
Oh, I know that one as well. Yeah.
When I was getting into New Wave a few years ago, that this is one of the first steps I made. And then realized, like, I don't know if this is justifiably New Wave. Like, I get why it could have been put in with it,
right?
It's kind of a lot of just rock music.
Yeah
And it's very poppy. I don't know,
very poppy. Coming out on the 13th, Radiohead released their album The Bends, which is my favorite of their records.
And that's, I didn't listen to that one.
No, that was OK Computer.
I listened to OK Computer and I listened to In Rainbows. Those are the two I've listened to.
And wasn't there third one we listened to for a different list? Hail to the Thief?
Maybe. I don't remember that one.
I feel like we listened to that one too. Yeah. Coming out on the 14th, we have Mad Season with their record Above, the only record they put out.
I don't even know who Mad Season is.
Mad Season is it was like a side project that Lane Staley started with, I think, a couple other grunge dudes. I can't remember who all was in that band. I want to say like somebody from Mudhoney or something.
Okay.
But yeah, that came out on the 14th.
Glad.
I liked it.
I'm glad that the Seattle fans will be in for it.
Yeah. Also coming out on the 14th, we have Goo Goo Dolls with A Boy Named Goo.
That's our big one, right?
That's one of the big ones. Yeah, that's their first big one.
Yeah, as you know, no familiarity with Goo Goo Dolls other than the big one, the big song, not the album.
Goo Goo Dolls is one of those bands I keep putting off giving to you because I don't know which record to bring to you first.
You just got to commit like I did with 3-6.
I know. Yeah, I know. Just got to go for it. This might be the one, though, so it might be a little while before you get it. I have big ties to this record, but I've also told you, like, they were punk rock to begin with, and this is not that.
But so, when I think of the Goo Goo Dolls, the first thing I don't think of is you telling me they were punk rock. I think of the Goo Goo Dolls, so.
I know, that's why I was debating giving you one of their punk rock records, so I could kind of hit you with that first, but I don't know.
But then you run the risk of, I love the punk rock stuff, and then I listen to the pop record, and I'm like, this is fucking awful, Scott. Why would
I know? That's what's going through my head all the time when I think about this. It's terrible. Also on the 14th, we had the self-titled record from Collective Soul.
What was their big hit?
I think Shine was the name of their big hit.
Never Let Your Light Shine Down. That one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa. Never Let Your Light Shine Down. That was on Buzz Ballads. Yeah. I like that song.
Oh, there you go. Okay. So you have some familiarity with that?
I bet I have familiarity with the singles of this time, but definitely not full records.
Oh, for sure. They were all over Buzz Ballads.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Jock Rock.
And that's all I needed. I didn't need your Collective Soul deep cuts, if you will.
Right, right. Also on the 14th, we have E-40 with In a Major Way.
I definitely listened to it. I listened to E-40's discography maybe a year ago now. So I've definitely listened to it. I don't really remember it.
Gotcha. Last one for the 14th, we have Tupac with Me Against the World.
Okay. Yeah. I see the cover. I think I own it. Not the one I would bring you.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know, I suppose. On the 20th, we have Elton John with Made in England.
I don't know what one that is.
Neither do I. 95 Elton John seems crazy.
That sounds like 97 Meatloaf. Like, just why is it happening? Like, what do we got going on? It's probably a good record.
Who is this for? It's probably good. Probably Elton good John is amazingly talented.
You got to include fucking Bernie in there. Isn't that his writing partner?
I have no idea.
Bernie Taupin?
Is that right? Your Elton John knowledge far exceeds my own.
And I think the whole thing is like, Elton John would write the music and Bernie Taupin would write the lyrics. Like, that was the thing.
Oh, is that the thing? I didn't know that.
Known for his songwriting partnership with Elton John, recognized as one of the most successful partnerships of a kind. Taupin is behind the majority of John's songs dating back to 1960s.
Whew.
In 1967, Taupin answered an advertisement in the music newspaper New Musical Express, placed by Liberty Records that was seeking songwriters. Elton John responded to the same advertisement, and they were brought together, collaborating on albums since.
Man, what a wild thing to happen.
Right?
Hey, we're looking for songwriters. Here, we'll give you gold for decades.
Taupin also worked with Alice Cooper, Tom Robinson, Gary Osborne. Don't know who those last two people were.
Me neither, but him working with Alice Cooper as well as working with Elton John.
Here you go. Taupin wrote the lyrics for, and I was going to run these through, Rocket Man, Levon, Crocodile Rock, Honky Cat, Tiny Dancer, Candle in the Wind, Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, Burning the Jets, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, Mona Lisa's Mad Hatters, Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me, The Bitch is Back, Daniel, Your Song, I'm Still Standing, I Guess That's Why They Call It Blues, Sad Songs, Nikita, The One, Simple Life, Last Song, Club at the End of the Street, Believe, like just all the fucking...
Oh my God, all the huge hits, all the gigantic hits.
He wrote rewrote the lyrics for Candle in the Wind in 97 to tribute.
For Princess Di, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's doing all right financially, I'd say.
I would think so. Gigantic hits, holy cow. Released on the 21st, we have Steve Vai with Alien Love Secrets.
I know who Steve Vai is. I couldn't tell you. I know the name Steve Vai. I know he's a guitarist of some renown. I don't know what band he was initially in before.
Me neither.
But I know Steve Vai as a name.
We also have Stevie Wonder with Conversation Piece.
Stevie Wonder's a big blind spot for me, and that feels weird to say because he's a blind man.
You can't say that. You can't say that. Oh, God.
He's a blind spot for me. I don't know. I love the conspiracy theories about whether he's blind or not. I just love him.
Are there conspiracy theories? I didn't know that.
There's like stories where somebody, I can't remember who told the story, but somebody showed, and this is me telling a story fourth hand. So
sorry
if all the fucking information's wrong. Somebody showed up to Willie Nelson's house, I think it was. And there's just a car doing donuts out in a field, just ripping donuts. And they go to the house and they're like, Willie, what's going on with your car? And they're like, oh, it's just Stevie. He's just out there doing donuts. And they went out and Stevie's just out there doing donuts in a car.
Stevie Wonder is out there on Willie's property doing donuts.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to be able to see to do donuts.
True, but that's I think one of the funniest ones, because imagine you show up to somebody's house and they're like, who's out there driving that car? Like Stevie Wonder's like, No, it isn't.
You know what? If there's a group of people that I could see Stevie Wonder driving around, Willie Nelson would be in that group. With the amount of property I imagine Willie Nelson having, and just like some beat up shit car, and Stevie Wonder being like, you know what? Yeah, exactly. Stevie Wonder being like, you know what? I've always wanted to drive. Willie being high off his ass and like, let's go take a ride back out in the field. Let's do it. We'll get you hooked up.
Well, there's also ones where he like doesn't have a handler around, and like he'll cover somebody's eyes and say like, guess who? But like, how did he know who they were?
That's fucking funny.
Or like somebody will cover his eyes and say, guess who? And he'll know who it is. Like there's these stories here and there.
Gotcha. Well, did you see the video of him giving, like, trying to give Mariah Carey a microphone at the awards show?
Yes.
Yeah, that was sad.
but then there's also videos of him, like, knowing exactly where the mic stand is and all that stuff. But, like, that could also be a stage setup. You know what I mean?
I was going to say, he's been doing it for years and years and years. So that could be, like, you will always have the stage set up this way for Stevie Wonder.
One of the other ones is I can't remember the exact specifics, but there's like a elevator story with him and Shaq.
Okay.
Where like Shaq got in an elevator with him and Stevie knew it was him, but there was nobody else in the elevator and Shaq didn't say anything.
Well, I mean, when the elevator sinks 5 inches when somebody walks in, you have a few guesses off the top of your head.
And I mean, I would love if it came out that he's like 97% blind. Like he can still see.
Still see a little bit.
Like, he can make out shapes and can see enough. I would love that. And then they were just like, Stevie, we got to fucking run with this, dog. What, you blind?
Right.
There's another story of somebody tried to fight Stevie, like, in a studio or something, and Stevie whipped his ass.
Yeah, hell yeah.
like, honestly, the other dude never even got a shot in. Stevie just, like, laid him out 5-6 punches.
That's crazy.
I love these stories. I love them. I love the idea of if you get beat up by Stevie Wonder, you can never go back to the studio. You're done.
That's it.
You walk in there like, hey, didn't you get beat up by Stevie? Oh, all right.
Oh, fuck. Yes, I'm that guy.
I'll pack my stuff. All right. Sorry. Now that we're over the Stevie Wonder conspiracy.
I don't think we are over it. I think we just ran out of it off the top of our head information. We need to do a deep dive. Also released on the 21st, we have Monster Magnet with Dopes to Infinity.
I don't know if that's one I listen to. I've listened to a few Monster Magnet records. We've talked about Monster Magnet on previous episodes.
Yeah.
Don't dislike, don't love. Just one of those kind of things.
I know like the one single and that's it, and didn't love it. So next record released on the 21st is Symbolic by the band Death.
Never listened to it.
Yeah. I'm debating on which death record to bring you as well, because I like them. I'm a fan, and you haven't listened to a full one.
No, I know a bunch of the lore, like about the lead guy and everything, but I don't know the band. I don't know. I essentially I know what the music sounds like. You know what I mean? Because like that's essentially where death metal was born. But
right, it's Florida 90s hard metal. It's death metal. Yeah, yeah. Released on the 27th, we have Celine Dion with DEUX.
Nope.
Also released on the 27th, we have Silverchair with Frog Stomp.
Friend of the show? Album covered?
Friend of the show release? Yep, we covered that record. Go listen to that. Go listen to that episode. Released on the 28th, we have Faith No More with King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime. Where do you sit on Faith No More?
That's not the one with the dog on it, cover, right?
I have absolutely no idea. The only thing I know about Faith No More is that song Epic. Yeah.
Yeah, about jerking off.
I think we've talked about that before, and I had no idea that that's what that was about.
And it's insane, because when you re-listen, you're like, how's this about anything else but jerking off?
I still haven't re-listened to it with that in my head.
You probably should, because
I just need to go do it now.
There's nothing else. There's nothing else.
It is the one with the dog on the cover.
I don't like Faith No More. I think Epic, just to connect it, I guess. Epic, I think, did for Presidents, or did for Faith No More what I think Lump may have done for Presidents. No, because Faith No More were still, like, their other songs weren't super comedic, I guess. Some were.
Yeah.
I think once Epic came out, it felt like a novelty band.
Also on the 28th, we have Big L with Lifestyles of Da Poor and Dangerous.
Big L's a giant name.
Yeah.
East Coast hip hop that maybe I listen to a record. I'm not sure.
I've never listened to. I always hear rappers drop his name and always feel like I need to listen to him. And then I just never do.
I don't know whether to say you're good or not. Like, I think I've listened to
him. Yeah,
and I don't remember one way or the other, which, you know, could go either way. I listen to a lot of stuff.
Also on the 28th, we have Mudhoney with My Brother the Cow. You're not a Mudhoney guy.
I know the name Mudhoney. Maybe did we listen to a record for that 100 list? There might have been a Mudhoney record on there.
I don't think there was.
Then I might have listened to one somewhere on some list. But
yeah. The last record I have released in March 95, Old Dirty Bastard with Return to the 36 Chambers, the dirty version.
No, I just got Return to 36 Chambers on vinyl, but I'm not listening to it until you, because you said you are bringing me that for the show at some point, so...
Yep.
We'll do that whenever we get there. But it's not like I don't have a crate full of records that I haven't listened to. So it's not like it's sitting out and be like, oh, I'm just staring at it. Nope, there's plenty there. There's plenty with it.
Come on, let's get to it. Well, I have the Billboard Hot 100 and the Billboard 200, whichever list you would like to hear first.
I don't think it matters. I'll know the Hot 100 more, so let's just knock out the 200.
Knock out the 200. Okay, here we go. Coming in at number 5 on the Billboard 200, week of March 11th, 1995, TLC with Crazy Sexy Cool.
Man, what a good record. I think I prefer Fan Mail just because of the age I was when it came out, but Crazy Sexy
Cool. I was going to say you were older when Fan Mail came out.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Coming in at number 4, we have Eagles with Hell Freezes Over. I believe it's a live record.
Great.
Yeah, my dad was big into that one.
Tell you what I want less than an Eagles record. A live Eagles record.
Yeah, my dad was big into that one. Coming in number 3, we have Green Day with Dookie.
There's some good songs on that.
I love that record. I mean, as much shit as we talk about Green Day now, Green Day in the 90s and early 2000s, I was still a pretty big fan.
Yeah, I don't know why. I felt like I wasn't supposed to, even before American Idiot. Like, I just felt, it felt to me too commercial, but there's some good songs there.
It's good songs. Yeah. I think Dookie is phenomenal. I won't even lie about it. I think it's a fantastic record. Coming in number 2, we have Garth Brooks with The Hits.
Okay.
So a best of Garth Brooks record coming in number 2.
I mean his records are standard too. Give me
his records are pretty good.
There's a reason he was the biggest fucking artist in the world for like three to five years.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He was huge. He was huge. And coming in number 1. Boys to Men with 2.
Sure. I don't, again, especially around this time, R&B is a blind spot for me. I don't know what to latch on. I've heard a bunch of it, never full records, but I've heard a bunch of the singles and the stuff that was bigger, but I just never knew where to like.
Oh man, I was huge into this record. I was huge into that Boys to Men record. Yeah, big time.
That sounds wild. That sounds yeah,
I really was. I bought it on CD when I was shit in 95, so 13, singing along like I was Wanye. I think that was his name, right?
Sounds right.
Yeah.
If it's not.
It was crazy times. Crazy times for your boy. Now, as far as the longest on the charts, we have a few that are over 200 weeks, but we've talked about them before. So hanging in at 136, we have the Phantom of the Opera Highlights, 262 weeks. 138, Enigma, MCMXCAD, 210 weeks, which we listened to. And Jesus Christ, I wish we would.
It's nothing. It's elevator music.
It's just such a nothing record. Yeah. And coming in at 199, we have Van Morrison with the best of at 242 weeks. The longest running, like, not best of slash nothing record was coming in at 96 with 185 weeks. Self-titled Black Album from Metallica.
Yeah, 185. Yeah. Straight? Yeah. That'd be straight, right?
That's probably straight, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Good for them.
Billboard Hot 100, week of March 11, 1995. Coming in number five, we have You Gotta Be by Desiree? It's R-E-E, though. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know it. Maybe if I heard it.
Nope.
Maybe if I heard it.
Coming in number four, we have Baby by Brandy.
I'm sure I know that. It was probably performed on the aforementioned All That by Brandy at some point.
Yeah, I think if I heard it, I would probably know it. But just being named Baby, there's a million songs titled Baby.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially in 90s R&B.
Oh, yeah. Coming to number three, we have Candy Rain by Soul For Real.
No.
Yeah, I have no gauge on that one either.
No.
Yeah. Number two, we have Creep by TLC.
Okay, I know that.
Great track.
Better than the other Creep, in my personal opinion.
Creep by Radiohead Creep? I love that song, too, though. Coming in number one, we have Take a Bow by Madonna.
Okay, Madonna. Keep it moving.
So, a bunch of R&B, and then Madonna.
Yeah. Man, talk about blind spot. Madonna is a pretty big blind spot.
I know some early Madonna, but, like, it's all hits. Like a Virgin.
And Material Girl,
yeah. We're doing a Madonna draft to get us out of this blind spot. That'd
there's
be wild.
There's at least five records in there you're going to despise. Because I think she made, like, some dance hall records.
Oh, did she really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And we don't do a Madonna draft until we do a Cher draft. So that's
Yeah, we'd have to do that first. Are we adding Sonny and Cher into that Cher draft?
Ah, Cher universe. We'd have to add the Allman Brothers. We'd have to add
not people she's banged.
They were married, dog. They had a kid.
I know. We'd have to add Dedsy into the fucking draft.
Yeah, we would. The crazy part about a Cher universe draft, though, is there's plenty of just Cher records that it would feel weird.
Yeah, we could just do a Cher. Weird. We could just do a regular Cher draft.
But then again, it's also like, in that time, even some of the Sonny and Cher records are just like standards. So it's hard to draft standard records. It's like, oh, this is a song that was sung by 60 people. Like, how do we? It sounds good.
Right.
Cher.
Yeah, great. Of course it sounds good. Thanks.
I love Cher and I don't hate the standard records, but I much prefer original work or at least original songs.
I'd have to look at her discography to see what she's actually put out and how many she's actually put out, but.
There's also some dancehall records in there that you would not be happy about.
I'm sure. I have two songs that ran the board, the list for 42 weeks. Coming in at number 44 and 49. Number 44, we have 100% Pure Love by Crystal Waters. And at 49, we have Wild Night by John Mellencamp with Michelle and Dege Ocello.
Nah, I have no idea.
I know both of them. I'm not a fan of either of those songs. So,
okay, fair.
So, the President of the United States of America, self-titled record, released March 10th, 1995, 13 tracks, 37 minutes, 54 seconds. Brand, tell me what you thought about Kitty.
Yeah, let's get this fucking marathon on the roll here, I guess. This is a long episode.
It is.
It's because we haven't fucking talked in 2 weeks, so we're talking about
kind of bullshit. We keep going off on tangents and stuff.
All right, so Kitty.
Yeah.
The meows to open this track are acceptable. Like I like at first I was confused, but if you would not have given me this with the asterisk of it's a comedy month, so it's kind of a comedy record, I would have been much harder on this record because I would have taken it as a music forward record as opposed to
nothing about this record is serious.
No, it is not.
No, absolutely nothing.
But because it's for April, I'm all right with it. I'm evaluating the whole record based on like comedy, essentially. This is actually a catchy track, and I enjoyed this thing front to back. And the meows.
Yeah, there you go. I love the meows. Meow, 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 meow.
Yeah, it's solid. It's catchy. Moving on to the second track, Feather Plucking.
Yeah.
As much as the first one felt like just a fun comedic song, this one's kind of feels exactly like the Peaches Lump band I expected. Like, okay, the first one felt like a fun comedic song that was still a good song. This one just kind of felt like, oh, it's still kind of the same thing. So if you would have asked me what I was going to get, if you'd have been like, hey, what do you think you're going to get on this record based on Lump and Peaches? I would have said probably every other song sounding like Lump and Peaches to try to get it.
Right.
And then Kitty Opening didn't do that for me, but Feather Plucking kind of sounds like that. So it's a fine track, but nothing earth shattering. Like, it's not like, oh my God, this thing's great, or this is awful, which it's fine.
Oh, there probably shouldn't be any of that reaction to any of these songs on this record at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just odd, kind of out there, funny ish, minimal rock for the time.
Yeah, that's fair. Moving on to Lump, which absolute classic, stone cold classic.
Oh man. Yeah.
It's great. It makes me think of the whole broken clock analogy, like a broken clock still right a couple times
twice
a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But this track might be flawless. Like, it might be like, for what it is, it might be perfectly done. It's an excellent track. It oozes that 90s feel because it's been used in a bunch of movies of the 90s. So, like, that
tons of stuff.
It.
Yeah.
But I don't know what else I could say about Lump that I'm sure somebody else who loves it more than I do has not already said. It's great.
Right. It's a great track. Yeah.
Moving on to Stranger.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fine enough song, but I genuinely think they knew what Lump was and just said, fuck it, it doesn't matter, put the weird one there. Like, right after Lump.
Right.
Like, I think they were like, guys, Lump is a fucking hit. Throw Stranger after Lump. Nobody's
throw some filler in there. Nobody's going to care about it anyway.
It constantly jukes me. Like, I think it's going one way, it builds, and then a hard turn back. I like that in songs. I like being surprised in songs like that. But again, it's after Lump, so it already had a shadow over it. It's fine.
For sure.
Another fine song. Nothing negative about it. Bull Weevil. This is just a great song. Fun song.
Hey! About a beetle. Oh, fantastic.
A couch potato beetle that won't leave his house. And then I got a little deeper on this one, Scott.
Oh, did you?
Is this a story about eradicating a boll weevil infestation to increase crop production? Is this a capitalistic anthem?
I have no idea. I never took it that seriously.
I think this may be a capitalistic anthem. Like, if we eliminate these boll weevils, our crops, we get 20 to 30% more crop out of it there's no boll weevils.
Man, the farmers are bumping this thing in their... in their tractors.
Yeah, maybe I'm going too deep when I think it's a capitalistic anthem, but I'm gonna stick with it being a fun bug song because I like it. I like the idea of a fun bug song.
I'm for that as well.
Moving on to Peaches, the other big single.
Yeah, huge.
Another
single.
Absolutely undeniable knocker. That the only negative of it is the overplayed factor and of the people that I remember loving it in junior high. That's the other
night. Oh,
I just remember just singing it. And it's like, oh, aren't you interesting? Like, that's just what it felt like.
Right.
Like, it's like, oh, you like Peaches? Yeah. Aren't you interesting?
Yeah, great. Great.
It's really great, though. It's a pretty great vibe setter. It opens with the smallest, softest riff, and it's immediately transporting you into this Peaches world. It's very well done, and it does knock pretty hard. Like, taken out of any context, it knocks pretty hard.
It's pretty great, but it was overplayed like crazy. I remember when it was coming out. Man, you couldn't listen to the radio, turn on MTV without hearing it. Yeah, it was huge.
Next up is Dune Buggy and a bug song. Following an absolute Stone Cold classic shouldn't work as well as this does. It feels like it's in the same universe as Peaches, which I think helps it a lot. Like, they didn't change dynamics on the two.
Yeah.
And I really like the track. The visuals make me smile every time. The Dune Buggy, I love it. It makes me smile. Another fun
dropping
bug song.
A mini Dune Buggy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. Me too. Huge fan of it myself.
Next track, we are not going to make it. The false start and restart is great, as it feels like a messy kind of like punk influence track. And yep, then I love the whole song being a super catchy, good song about them not being talented and you don't know how to rhyme while rhyming is solid. Yeah, this is a very well done song. And I do have to say, I listened to this song accidentally 25 times in a row at work.
What?
Okay, let me break it down. Let me break it down how this happened.
I need to know this.
When I do my notes, when I'm sitting down to do my notes, like I've already listened to the record a few times straight through. So sure. When I sit down to do my notes, I put each song on repeat and do my notes as I listen to the song.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I got pulled away from my workstation when I was listening to this one, and I couldn't change the song, and it was still on repeat. So I listened to this song 25 times in a row. And I think I'm good on it now. Like, I don't think I need it.
Yeah.
It's fine. Like, it's a decent track.
That's funny, but that sucks so bad because now you're, like, so over it.
It just kept hitting me. And it just kept sounding like, oh, my God, I got to change this song. I got to change this song. But I couldn't change the song. I was busy doing something. I was like, still playing. Still playing.
Oh,
although I'm not taking my earbud out and listening to the quote-unquote warehouse radio that is playing nothing but Rose Tattoo and Huey Lewis over and over again. It's rough, man.
Oh god.
Maybe I'll catch the end of "You're a fucking nightmare." He loves that song too. That's fucking awful. He plays the worst music. I believe this dude only thinks that every band has two songs. I honestly believe that.
That's it.
Like, once he hears a song from a band, that's the only songs they have. You'll never
hear. And he loves them.
Yeah.
Kind of guy
that, like, pulls up to Subway and makes the kids finish the Avenged Sevenfold in the car before they get out. Like, hey, we're not getting out the Avenged Sevenfold.
We're not done yet.
Moving on to Kick Out the Jams.
Yeah.
Is this not a cover?
It's kind of a cover. I guess if we talk, it's an interpolation. I suppose
because it's the same riff, but like the lyrics are absolutely
the lyrics
different.
Are completely different. The riff is the same.
Production is different.
Yeah. I think we've talked about it way early on in the podcast, an early episode. I think it's an interpolation. So they probably paid out MC5 to use the riff and like basically everything about the song except for the lyrics that they came up with.
It was weird because I was expecting a cover and then not getting one.
Yeah.
But a cover of an MC5 song after a song about a band not making it works in my head.
Yeah.
Like, I like the idea of that because MC5 is one of the most like influential bands in like certain genres of music. So it's like talking about how you're not talented and we're not a real band and then covering one of the most influential bands that has ever existed.
Feels wild. I absolutely love it. And then I love the lyrics they came up with that fit their band and style so much. I think it's hilarious.
Moving on to Body. What a track here, Scott. I actually love this track.
Really?
It's a straight mood track right through. I love the body. Yep. I love the yep. The yep is like the little cherry on top. Absolutely. This is another excellent track. I don't really get the comedy in this one unless I missed it, but I don't care either. I love the track.
Sure.
So
I think I don't know that it's comedy. I think it's more just odd. It's like out there.
Okay. Yeah. I'll take that. Yeah, I guess it was the time for like absurdist comedy and like almost meta comedy too, where like, oh, if you know it's comedy, it's not going to be funny because it's comedy. The old alternative comedy scene.
Sure. Yeah. You know that one.
Moving on to Back Porch. I choose to make my front side porch a back porch for the sake of the song. As sure. a guy that didn't have a back porch or didn't have any porch for like 12 years. And I do now again, this song is perfect.
Yeah.
The neighbors are going to be sick of seeing me out there. The old man, me on my back porch. Great.
For
song.
Sure.
This is a solid song. I love it. Yeah. I'm a big porch sitter guy. I like sitting on the porch.
I'm too. Yep.
Great track.
We have rocking chairs on our porch and Emily and I sit out there in the summer, just rocking back and forth.
Moving on to Candy. If nothing else, these songs 1000% commit to a bit. It just so happens that fully committing to a bit is kind of my bread and butter. Like, if I see If I see you trying and I see that you are fully committed, like you're not kind of like taking a step back, like, well, hold on, guys. No, you're committing to this bit. I will invest with you. I will invest as much as I can. Every reference in this, so many different types of candy and sugary treats, they committed to this bit full force. It's a great song. Another great song.
That's crazy.
Now the closer, Naked and Famous.
Yeah.
And wow, I don't know what switched up or happened, but for some reason, this one does nothing to me, and I kind of dislike it. I don't know what happened.
I'm not a big fan of it either.
I don't know what happened. If this isn't here, this album is excellent all the way through. It kind of leaves a sour taste in my mouth at the end of the record. I don't know what is different about it. It just doesn't work.
I feel like they didn't know how to end the record. And then
it's like all my friends showed up at my house, and then following along behind him is this dude I don't want to see.
Right.
And he just walked right in. I'm like, oh, great. Great.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Great. You're here. You made it. That's fantastic.
Like, I'm wondering if like the fuse for this, like my comedy music fuse is one track shorter. Like maybe it's a length thing. Maybe if this isn't here, it feels tighter. It feels better. Maybe this one just, but even as an individual track, I don't like it.
Like for me, it's not funny enough to be funny.
And it's not catchy enough to be a good song.
It's not. Yeah. It's not poppy enough to be like Peaches or Lump. And then it's Everybody Wants to Be Naked and Famous. Like him, like, so instead of being self-deprecating, like, we're not gonna make it, he's now being famous, and I guess maybe like that's supposed to be the funny part of it, but it doesn't hit right for me either.
I'm there with you.
Yeah, I don't know, it's not my favorite closer ever at all.
All right, so my top three.
Yeah, top three,
and
hit me with it.
For the sake of the top three, I'm removing Lump and Peaches because those are two absolute stone cold classics.
So yeah, I did the same exact thing.
Three. Aside from those, my number one, Dune Buggy. Dune Buggy!
It's my three. Yeah.
Great, great fan. My number two, Back Porch. Big Back
That's
Porch
my number two.
Here. My number three is Body.
Okay. It didn't make my list. But I have Bullweevil as a four, because I had to.
I would throw Bullweevil as my four, even though it might be a capitalistic anthem, and I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah. My number one is We're Not Gonna Make It / Kick Out the Jams, because they just fit so well together.
Okay. Kick Out the Jams confused me too much to be on my list. I just don't. I thought it was gonna be a cover, and then it's not a cover. And then I had to, like, the riff is the riff, but the production's so different that I had to, like, 1AB them to even, like, get that. Like, I didn't know.
Oh, right.
Because like, the production's so different. The riff doesn't exactly sound the same. It's the same vibe, but it's not, I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Brand? Presidents of the United States of America, self-titled record from 1995, Throne, Own, Phone, or Groan?
It's not a groan, because I enjoyed a lot of this. Naked and Famous is a groan, but the record's not a groan.
Yeah.
It's weird, because like Phone is supposed to be, we keep some tracks and listen to it, but that like kind of insinuates that when we own it, we're going to listen to it more, and that's usually not the case.
Right. I look at Own being more like I need to have it in my collection.
Yeah.
Like, so I can easily listen to it.
But that's hard, because then I have to take myself out of, oh, we cover this on the show. I should probably own this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. Like, I do that all the time.
Get
like,
that. Me too.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm getting an Elliott Smith record, but there's records that I don't give a shit about that if I saw them and I'd be like, oh, yeah, well, we covered that on the show.
I'd get it. Yeah. Right.
I don't know if I could see myself spinning this a lot, but I don't think I'd mind owning it. I think I'd own it. It's probably a light own. It's a light own, I'd say.
Sure. Hey, it's a win.
Every track but one is good. And one, if one is confirmed to be a capitalistic anthem, I'm going to have to backtrack on that one. But
I don't think it's been confirmed as that. So,
Scott,
take out of it what you will.
Bullweevil research. I found out 20 to 30% of crops are hindered by bullweevils. I looked into this. All right, so this isn't all you're listening to, though, Scott. What's your record of the week?
No. My record of the week is a 20-year record that you brought me that I never listened to before. All That Remains, This Darkened Heart. It was fantastic. I don't think I ever listened to an All That Remains record at all. And if I had, I probably would have listened to this one previously, because I would have gone on a deep dive of all their records, their discography, because I liked it so much. It was amazing.
Yeah, I own it, and It's absolutely more a Scott record than a Brand record. So I think I'm gonna send it to you, even though it's not cheap, and I don't really care that I don't, you know. If you're gonna appreciate it more than me, I don't give a shit how much it costs, how much it's worth in my collection.
Yeah.
Like, if you're gonna appreciate it, I'll 100% send it to you. It doesn't matter. My record of the week is a new release. I tried to keep like my newer release. I try to keep my records of the week to not be newer releases because I don't know
yeah.
in my head at times they have to show, and I don't know, but it's the new Medium Build record, Country. I fucking love it.
Yeah,
there are a couple songs on here that hit so unbelievably hard.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about it.
I think he's one of the first like songwriters that is effectively tapping into like a specific generational nostalgia.
Yeah, 100%.
There's people that have done it here and there, but he seems to have that exact, he knows exactly what things that kind of weren't important, but make you think of that time. And that's how
100%
songwriter pointing out.
Yeah. We talked about that with that, In My Room song or whatever the yeah. name of that song was.
Yeah.
God. Yeah. It was amazing how he took, like you said, the most random, insignificant type details of your bedroom when you were a kid or teenager, threw it on a song, and just like the nostalgia just washes over you and you're like, oh my God, like I am there.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Fucking great. I got to listen to it a few more times, but it's a strong, strong record.
It'll probably be on my year-end list because I didn't delete it. Like, I'm still keeping it in rotation, still listening to it. But if nothing else, In My Room is, it might be my track of the year, and it might not get beat out. Like, that might be my track of the year. Which would mean Medium Build has 2 years in a row.
There you
track
go.
Track of the year, because Best Friends last year was my track of the year, which is insane. Okay, so we covered Records of the Week. All we got to do is I got to tell you what we're doing next week, right?
Yeah, what do we got coming up?
I don't remember the year of this, but we're going to just dive into some. This is another band that I struggled with what record to give you, because there's a difference in their first couple. Their first one, I was super into it.
Mm.
Loved it. It's a little short, and it's a little kind of one note.
Oh, okay.
But as you know, there are some, if sometimes you'll listen to a record, it'll be one singular note, and you're like, oh, this is one note that I absolutely adore. So that's kind of what it was.
This is the one note I need.
Yeah. And then they change a bit through their next couple records, but I think this is their third record.
Okay.
And there's a couple specific reasons I gave you this one, and we'll see once we get into the record on the episode. But I'm going to give you Upon the Burning Bodies record, The World Is My Enemy Now.
Okay. I've never...
Do you know anything about Upon a Burning Body?
I've never heard of this band at all.
Okay. Okay, good. I'm going to assume...
When were they... I mean, were they big? I'm guessing like a metal scene, kind of?
They may have toured with some shit bands.
Oh, okay. Oh, were they like opening for like Five Finger Death Punch or...
You hit the nail on the head. They opened for Five Finger Death Punch.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, it's Mayhem Fest kind of band, maybe?
I didn't know that until after the fact. But
okay.
The first record I love. And there's a tinge kind of to their music that I think is interesting. And apparently I love this specific tinge. We'll talk about that in the episode.
We'll get to it. I'm stoked.
Yeah. So Upon a Burning Body, The World Is My Enemy Now, next week. Is that all? We got anything else, Scott? Other than I got to do all of our plugs. You got anything else?
No, that's it.
Follow us on X or Twitter at AOLpod. Follow us on Instagram at AOLpod. Send us an email at areyoulistening.pod@gmail.com. Join the Facebook group. Link will be in the show notes. Listeners, thank you very much for listening.
Always.
Listen to something new. Listen to something you love.
Homework.
Scott, thank you for the podcast. Thank you for the episode. Thank you for the friendship.
Thank you, brother.
Are you listening?
Are you listening?
And no, we don't do a Madonna draft until we do a Cher draft. So fully committing to a bit is kind of my bread and butter. Stevie Wonder's a big blind spot for me, and that feels weird to say because he's a blind man.
You're a fucking nightmare!
Fuck you.